Welcome to another episode of Inside UMiami Medicine. I'm Moni Ford, Dean and Chief Academic Officer of the University of Miami Leonard M. Miller School of Medicine. This morning, I am absolutely thrilled to welcome the Chief Human Resources Officer, Allison Mincy, as our guest.
Thank you, Dean Ford. It's my pleasure to be here with
Allison,
you.
Allison, I am thrilled and I'm looking forward to a very fascinating exchange with you. But before we get into some of the meatier questions, tell us a little bit about your background and how a young person growing from East Ohio, I understand, ends up being in this prestigious high-powered position as a chief human resources officer at the Miller School and your health, actually at the University of Miami, entire place.
That's right. Well, I am from Eastern Ohio, a very small town, coal and steel, you know, industry. I spent, the first 17 years of my life living the dream there with my family, developing a really deep work ethic. I graduated from a high school class of, get this, take a guess.
A couple hundred.
No. 32.
Whoa!
32 kids, a very small parochial school in Belair, Ohio. And I was actually raised in St. Clairsville, Ohio. So then I made the choice to go to, the largest university in the country at the time, at the Ohio State University.
From 32 to what, 42,000?
A little bit more than that, actually. Okay. A little bit more than that.
Wow.
So
wow.
That was in 1992.
How do you adjust from, this must have been, kind of a shock, huh?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it was a shock, but you know, with anything in life, you quickly find your place, you find your team, your group of people that you hang out with. And so that happened with me as well. And so I did my undergraduate degree at the, Ohio State University, you know, that's so important. But I did my undergraduate degree and then I stayed in Central Ohio to do my law degree as well at Capital University, which is a private law school.
Well, okay. Why law? What made you decide to pursue law?
You know, it was always a dream of mine. I can honestly say my mother was a nurse by background and my father, you know, blue collar, coal, like I said, coal and steel background. He had worked in the steel industry for years. And they instilled in both myself and my two sisters a very deep work ethic. And for me, that really meant going on to graduate school, graduate studies. And I was really always intrigued by the law. I was a political science major by background, and I wanted to go into business, though. And by the way, both of my sisters, like you, are doctors. So people often wonder, you know, nurse and, you know, blue collar background and,
what
you know.
What an amazing accomplishment. Yeah. Your family, your parents must be so proud.
They are. They are very, very proud. And both my sisters are wonderful human beings. And we've all found our way to healthcare, obviously, which is really, really interesting as well. But the law always intrigued me. I never wanted to litigate. And I never did. I ended up going into corporate law. So I was a corporate attorney for years. And immediately before I actually went back to my alma mater to work there, I spent time in Fortune 100 at Nationwide Insurance as a corporate attorney there.
Now, tell us about the transition. How do you go from Fortune 100 corporation to human resources at Ohio State?
So HR was always my business. So when I was practicing law, I supported HR in terms of employee benefits, employment law. And when I was at Nationwide Insurance, I was coming to a natural point in my career where I was making the decision, do I go into my business or not? And I loved HR. I loved HR practice, and I really wanted an opportunity to spend time in strategy in HR, not simply providing, if you will, legal counsel, which was in and of itself a big job. But I never thought that I would leave Nationwide. It was a really good fit for me. But the opportunity never materialized in my time frame, and an opportunity did at my alma mater, Ohio State.
It's wonderful. I mean, I think it's a dream come true to be able to go back to your alma mater and serve. But tell us a little bit about the transition from the corporate sector to academia. Those are two vastly different, employment conditions.
I agree completely. Now, at the time, naively, I thought, how different could it be? Similar size employers, highly regulated industries, higher education, academic medicine, and financial services on the other side. I really thought that, again, relatively naively, that it would be an easier transition than it actually was. And I spent the first 6 months at Ohio State in a bit of shock, just simply because it was so different. And in corporate America, it's easier to, I think, understand all of the varying types of people who work at a place like that. And the rules, policies, those types of things as a lawyer that I was, working and spending my time supporting were very different in higher education in particular. And the shared governance framework, I think, was probably the most, and I'll use the word shocking for me, because as you well know, in higher education, with the shared governance between faculty, staff, and of course our learners, it creates a different environment. And things that you're working on in any area, in any professional discipline, can get stopped in its tracks through that process in a very different way than in corporate America. But a mentor of mine actually, 6 months in, I'm like, I'm not sure this is for me. And he said, Allison, this is exactly for you. You spend your time building relationships and networking. You have to think of higher education as more like a puzzle. You're going to put, it's varying pieces. You're going to put, sometimes you're going to get a corner, and sometimes, some days you're going to get nothing at all. But you have to think of it like a puzzle.
And to that end, what are some of the unique challenges that you face in the academic environment that are so vastly different? I know you talked about the shared governance model,
right.
which is more, in a corporate structure, there's no such a thing. But anything else that struck you?
So for sure, I would say many things. One of the things that I've come to love and embrace is that the mission areas, the tripartite mission areas of education, clinical care, and research, and the individuals on the faculty that are doing that work, I feel, and not that my mission where at the other organizations that I work was unimportant, the mission that I support now, that I supported at Ohio State, if I can help you, in terms of something that I can take off your plate from an HR policy process or even a problem and work through that in a different way than, again, in kind of that corporate space, it just makes me feel so much more connected to the mission.
That's a fascinating statement. And is there a difference in terms of mission or in terms of culture? And perhaps let's linger on the culture concept. Okay. How do you define culture? Do you sense that there is some difference?
I do. I definitely do. I think that the culture at any organization is what I would best describe as its personality. And because we have our tripartite mission and we've got, again, those three important stakeholders all in unit working in unison together, learners, again, faculty and staff. And then because we're in the business of providing patient care, our patients obviously are another critical stakeholder. Those groups define and frankly lead our culture. Really focusing on the values of an organization, especially in one like ours, and making sure, you and I talk about this all the time as leaders, that we are living those values and communicating the same. That's something I think that's very different in an organization like ours.
And as the chief human resources officer for the entire University of Miami, so what do you feel are some of those core values that should be in the fabric of our culture?
Yes, definitely. I think focusing again on the tripartite mission of education, research, and clinical care, our values are around taking care of all of our stakeholders and then communicating those values again all the way down to the front lines. But diversity, equity, and inclusion is a key component of all of those, with inclusiveness really emerging as something that we focus on here on a daily basis. But definitely, I do think that we have work to do as other organizations coming out of the pandemic have an opportunity to refocus the organization in looking at their values and making sure, again, for us, through our shared governance framework, that we're all really clear on what those are.
This is so well said, because as we know, it's Peter Drucker who talks about culture in general, but we often get caught up in terms of building our strategic initiative. We talk about strategy, we talk about strategic plan, and so on and so forth. But Drucker says that, you know, culture eats strategy for lunch, right, and maybe breakfast and dinner too. And so it's important, therefore, that we have the right culture if, as an institution, we're going to reach our full potential.
Right. I agree completely. Yeah. I agree completely.
Good. Feel free to expand.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, it's about really taking the pulse of your workforce on a regular basis. And as you know, we've engaged in a couple of different exercises here, which is considered an HR best practice. And many organizations across the nation do this. So the things that we have done importantly recently are really seeking to understand the collective voice of the workforce. And we do that, as many other organizations do, through surveying. But I like to refer to it as not simply a survey. That is a tool in the toolbox of an overall workforce engagement program. But again, really understanding that collective voice of the workforce and the things that as leaders we have opportunity to do better around. And then actually doing it. That is something that I think many organizations continue to have opportunity. They simply send out a survey and then they don't do anything in response to the survey. So it becomes an exercise in survey fatigue and then distrust of the workforce. So really not focusing on everything that you hear, but picking, you know, one or two things that the organization can work on in response is something, again, that we're going to continue to focus on here and that I believe and continue to see as a best practice.
This is so well said. And to the extent that ultimately we want to deliver on our overarching strategies for the health system, the University of Miami, which parenthetically just was admitted to the AAU.
That's right.
Big deal. Yes. So the question is, how do we build on that culture? How do we assess the effectiveness of the culture? Are there some specific metrics that we should be looking at? Because I think the survey, the culture of engagement that you're talking about, those are all the things that help to sharpen our tools.
Right. So the metrics, I mean, I think are relatively simple. Mm-hmm. Now, simple to outline what they are, you know, simple to shift, no. I mean, this is something, again, you have to decide what your organization believes in. One of the things that we believe in is a high degree of engagement and productivity. So we will continue to track an engagement score across the entire workforce, and we will roll that up to the University of Miami, and we'll put targets around how we want to see ourselves improve. And we will also do that by segments, again, faculty, staff, and then, you know, all of our varying components of the organization. Other metrics, you know, that we do track that we'll continue to continue to look at, retention rates for our faculty. Obviously, you know, you and I, obviously in faculty affairs here, tracks time and rank. We look at that again and cross cuts as well, so we can understand if there's different and varying impacts for particular groups. We look at turnover, where we're seeing, again, that's more in, kind of in the retention space. And obviously, we're looking at where we're recruiting from, all of those different metrics that you look at from a recruitment perspective.
So let me shift gear a little bit. The pandemic has clearly created all sorts of significant stressors on any institution's ability to maintain a culture. The hybrid work mode clearly presents all sorts of challenges. So how do you approach this? And how do we maintain that cultural productivity engagement in that particular context? And are there other impediments that you feel we have to address?
Right. Interestingly, I had a conversation just this morning with another colleague around, again, what we believe around remote work, hybrid 100%. As the head of HR, you know, I can sit here and say remote work is part of our future. I can also say, you know, even in the past, you know, couple of years, it continues to evolve very routinely. And this is, I agree with what you said, this is something that can heavily impact our culture if we don't continue to evolve it. It can impact our culture in a number of ways as we think of how do we immerse newly hired members of our workforce into our culture. What does it mean, again, to be part of the you? And making sure there's a different conversation that's occurring for, again, those newly hired individuals versus maybe people who have already been embedded into the culture and have embraced it. Remote work, again, is something that we have to continue to look at what is considered a best practice and then what's considered a best practice for us. And there's a concept that's emerging called proximity bias. I don't know if you've heard of this or not, but basically this is one aspect that we have to focus on for those that work remotely, in addition to numerous other aspects like burnout, well-being, et cetera, is development, is professional development. I mean, there, when you're working remotely, there's the flat affect, you know, at times of the phone, of a Zoom meeting or a Teams meeting, what have you. And then there's not that, hey, you know, Jody said something really interesting. Let me grab her after the meeting because I think she's really bright and I want to see what else she's interested in. So, you know, leaders, managers, and colleagues, frankly, have to be much more intentional about professional development kind of in that real time due to that proximity bias, meaning if that person is not right by me on a regular basis, I'm not necessarily tapping them on the shoulder.
So, as the head of HR, how do you address this? How do you maintain the line of communication in a remote work environment?
This is something that has continued to evolve. And I just asked, you know, a couple of my team members yesterday to, you know, again, benchmark, make sure that we're following up on best practice, because I do think that, you know, we need to provide managers, and we have done some of this. We can always get better and improve, obviously, as best practices continue to evolve. But we have to provide managers with the instructions and the tools on how to do exactly that, on how to be intentional about coffee chats. You know, making sure that they're, you know, having more informal downtime across their teams that are working remotely so that it's not always that flat affect and that there is professional development that is programming, meaning non-episodic systematized programming across the organization that does pay attention to those individuals within the workforce that are on site and that are off site, if you will, working remotely in whatever fashion.
To that end. Prior to the pandemic, we heard about the quote-unquote great corporations mm-hmm. that had the fancy right. lounges, right. the lunches, right. Place to take a nap, and things like that, and as enhancers of well-being and productivity. Mm-hmm. So now, what do we do? How do we, again, adapt in this hybrid environment and still make sure that we are addressing some of the things we're talking about, burnout, which could be because I'm staring at a computer all the time.
That's right.
And lacking that human interaction that we talked about, the proximity bias. So all those things, yeah.
Yeah, again, it's something that we have to be, I believe, very intentional around. And we cannot view each individual. Like, we have to obviously assess the nature of the work itself and make sure, irrespective of on or off site, that the work can be done appropriately and that the individuals can be productive. So we have to find ways to assist in measuring productivity in a more robust way. And at the same time, you know, measuring exactly what you're talking about. And again, we do some of this through workforce engagement programming, measuring that burnout, that the well-being, making sure that we have appropriate tools. One of the things that I talk a lot about is appropriate opportunities for bi-directional communication with the workforce and more modern approaches, which we have opportunity in higher education and academic medicine to really speak to the workforce in a way that permits us to communicate and them to communicate back to us So there's technology out there that we need to better take advantage of. We are here so that we can provide a workplace experience that mirrors to the fullest extent possible what you and I expect that we get in our personal lives. So you want those channels that you can sign up to. And you know, what we'll be doing here in the relative near term is we will have opportunities, more rich opportunities, if you will, for our workforce, dependent upon, in this particular instance, if they're a remote worker, they can sign up to a channel that will provide them with the, you know, tools that we have determined as an organization that can help support their, again, their productivity and their engagement. And that will look different, you know, for those workers who are here on site. And, you know, in our environment, we obviously, because we're providing patient care and we're teaching the next generation, we have to be predominantly on site.
Now, bringing it all together, one of the important concepts that we have tried to embrace to enhance productivity in the academic arena is the concept of team science.
Yes.
And avoiding silos. So how are you making sure that we do not develop too much fragmentation and also create that culture of collaboration?
Right.
Especially given the challenges that you just talked about.
So a relatively easy thing that we did, again, this is, you know, incumbent upon the leadership team, if you will, to make sure that we're communicating down and holding one another and then the workforce accountable to it, is a set of shared goals. So on an annual basis, we infiltrate into the community after good and rich discussion. These are our five goals. Again, it's not going to be, you know, too many that makes it too cumbersome. But in those five goals, the entire workforce, it is our deep hope, can see themselves in some fashion. So that enables the organization to be more of a system. But also, you know, in you and I talk about this, we must, as leaders, have a healthy respect for the individuals and the work that they do. Again, because there are academic medicine, higher education, the science, it can be different. And it is different, dependent upon, you know, again, the work that the individual is doing. So we have to have that ability to both have that kind of, again, in this example, set of systematized goals, but the individual has to be able to see themselves and their work and the impact in those goals.
And clearly, that's one way to prevent burnout and make people feel more valued.
I agree.
I really love the way you framed it. That's exactly right. Now, so to shift gear a little bit, talk about how we create an inclusive environment that proactively provides resources needed to support our diverse community. After all, we are in the business of trying to promote health equity at the middle school and UHealth.
Exactly. Well, I think, you know, just what I was saying and making sure that while we have a common purpose and a common set of, again, annual goals, each individual can find themselves in the work that we do in a very deep and rich and connected way. Because, you know, from where I sit, we want to make sure that while this is obviously a place of employment, this is a place that people can bring their best selves to every day. Again, whether that's on-site or off-site, we want to make sure that we're providing that opportunity. And that means that we do have to, in my world, we have to provide different benefits. You know, while we have a series of systematized benefit offerings that, you know, we provide to the entire workforce, there are different components of those that meet the needs of whatever aspect an individual within our workforce is in their life, and also whatever the needs of their family are. And we do, again, I think, have opportunity in terms of inclusivity to provide those better opportunities for bidirectional communication with the workforce, because I think that will only improve people's ability to bring their best selves to work every day if we as leaders have a better way and better mechanism of hearing them.
This is beautiful. And are there specific initiatives that your team is taking to ensure that we do have a diverse workforce?
Sure. So, you know, obviously, I think many organizations for a long time have done things like ensuring that there's a diverse slate of candidates, especially for senior leader level roles. Those are things that we track, obviously, and we continue to do. We make sure that there's appropriate training. Again, for my team, there's a lot of work that we do around ensuring that, you know, just the recruiters to the fullest extent possible are free from implicit bias, and that they're aware of that concept and how that impacts and could impact the work that they do. You know, we do a lot of programming in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space, and that's something that will continue to evolve. Many of the metrics, you know, that I tracked in Ohio and our ability to impact based on workplace and workforce availability were different than in this particular part of the country. So the tactics and, you know, the tracking of those things and making sure that we have good opportunity to impact are different here.
Post-COVID, we've seen all sorts of changes in terms of the quality of the workforce, the interest of the workforce, people have different priorities. Do we have to employ new tactics to recruit? And if so, I mean, we've seen certainly on the academic side that we have a different generation of learners, and partly our new curriculum tries to meet them in their own space. Is that a similar challenge in terms of the new generation of workers, especially those post-COVID?
Yeah. So this is probably anybody in, you know, my profession, you know, post-COVID has, you know, really been in a bit of a tailspin, if you will. And it's been great for me because I love to learn and to think about doing things differently. It does not intimidate me at all. But man, I have really been forced to think about things in a wholly different way, because not only have expectations changed, but perspectives overall have changed. And what's important to people, to human beings, has changed. And people have made conscious decisions. I mean, there's all these new concepts that have emerged in my professional practice, including things like proximity bias and quiet quitting. We've all heard of this. And all of these things that, again, have emerged post-COVID. But staffing has been a massive challenge across industries. Massive challenge. In the healthcare industry, you know, it's been, I think, probably doubly as challenging as other industries, which have been difficult at best. But we have really focused heavily on that well-being, resiliency, burnout, supporting the workforce, again, understanding what it's going to take to bring, again, their best and whole selves to work every day. We have to look at compensation very, very routinely, almost on a daily basis, to make sure that we're, you know, our goal is to be market competitive. And for certain positions, obviously, you know, in the surgical space in particular, in all of the clinical environment across the board, it's been doubly, again, challenging to make sure that we're focused on and we have every single tool in the toolbox that can promote staffing.
And you've been quite successful at that. Remarkable. It's been quite remarkable and a testament to your leadership. And talking about leadership, in the remaining few seconds that we have, you have had a meteoric rise in the organization to the point where now you are the Chief Human Resources Officer for the entire University of Miami. Just tell us a little bit, you know, about your leadership style and those things that can inspire others to emulate your success.
Thank you for the very kind question. You know, I'm a servant leader. I believe I've been given a gift. It humbles me to my core that I get to do what I do every day. And I am not only a servant leader to you and other leaders here, I am a servant leader to my team. Without my HR team, I'm nothing. And I lead every day, you know, to support them, to make sure that they have the resources that they need to support the entire organization. Human resources is in the customer support, customer experience business. And that's what I tell my team every day. And again, making sure that they have the tools and resources to do that. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm all about relationships. And I spend every ounce of my discretionary time and energy making sure that I understand what I can do, what impediments, in terms of barriers there are. And my goal is to remove those barriers from, leaders like yourself and take those things onto my plate and really just to help get things done.
What a beautiful exclamation point, because you do that so well. And that's a good place to actually end this wonderful and fascinating interview. So thank you so very much for joining us this morning, Allison. It's been fantastic. And I know that the audience was going to be invigorated by everything you've had to share with us. So
thank you, Ford. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
And this has been another episode of Inside UMiami Medicine. Please join us again for our next installment. Thanks again, Allison.
Thank you, Dean Ford.